the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. My name is Josh Parcell. Thank you guys so much for listening. Great show coming up today. Jason McIntyre from The Big Lead, also Fox Sports 1, joins me to break down the college football playoff rankings. We get immediate reaction to a very unsuspenseful release of the top 25 on Tuesday night. So Jason and I will break all of that down. We'll talk about plenty of college football playoff scenarios, who can beat Alabama. I actually think that the answer might be more teams than you think. We'll talk about who we think has a chance against the Tide. We'll also talk about the race for the number four spot. Of course, the weekly four versus eight playoff discussion. But Jason has some interesting thoughts on why we should be at either four or eight. Listen in, you'll hear his answer there. So really, really good debate. And Jason, not a diehard college football guy like some of the other guests that I have on the show, but really, really loves the sport, eats it up, passionate about it as well, and great at making his case. He threw out some really good numbers, and it was a good, healthy debate. So really hope you guys stick around for that. And if you're a Virginia Tech fan, which I know plenty of Hokies listen to the show, I do end the podcast with some thoughts on the state of the Hokies program right now, coming off of the loss to Boston College. So if you want to skip ahead to that, that's in about a half hour, but stick around for Jason McIntyre first. Don't forget, guys, if you're listening, if this is your first time listening, go subscribe. Make sure you subscribe and also leave a rating and review. Review the podcast, and when you do, we're looking for your favorite college football player of all time. That's the game. Once I hit 150 reviews on Apple, I will hand out that gift card, $25 from Amazon. We're getting closer. I think I'm around 20 away right now. Hopefully, I can hit that before the end of the season. Always appreciate your support. Thank you guys so much for listening. And now, welcome on to the College Football Country Podcast. Recurring guest, Jason McIntyre from Fox Sports 1, from The Big Lead. Of course, founder of The Big Lead, and now he is all over the place. Jason, you have your own podcast now. I feel like everywhere I turn, you're doing something new. You're taking over the media world one step at a time. How the heck are you?
I'm great. Thanks for that introduction. I'll say this, though, man. You're right there. You're starting to rise up. I was not anywhere near where you are at your age. Man, you're making a quick ascension. Keep grinding. I love your stuff, Josh.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Well, you know, it's been a year since you've been on the podcast. I feel like we needed to bring you back on here. And no better time than, of course, with the college football playoff rankings just coming out, recording this on Tuesday night. Just saw the top six, and no surprises, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Michigan, Georgia, Oklahoma, feel like that was a foregone conclusion. Were you surprised? Were you surprised at any team in the top six, the order, or was that exactly what you expected?
No, yeah, I would largely agree with you. No surprises yet. I think you could build a case for Michigan over Notre Dame. I think we'll get to that, obviously. Listen, there's a couple big games left that will matter. But for now, I got no beef with it. And again, it's, you know, this is like a marathon. It's not where you start, it's where you finish. And I don't think anybody should be worried or concerned, given that there's several big games coming up in the next few weeks.
You know, we'll talk about some other teams outside the top six too in due time. But, you know, just talking about those teams one by one, I just want to kind of go down the line and get kind of your thoughts on their playoff chances. And once we get past Alabama, how likely it is they beat the Tide. We'll start with Alabama though. And was there anything that stood out to you about Saturday night's game? Was that what you expected? Were you impressed? Were you discouraged? I mean, where do you stand with Alabama after the 29-0 win?
I mean, I guess a minor takeaway would be I actually thought they would dominate more offensively than they did.
Yeah.
Listen, I mean, they weren't a juggernaut offensively. For a team that averages 54 points, I know they beat a lot of bums on the way there. I was not overly impressed with them against LSU, but again, Baton Rouge at night, like, this was a huge game. Obviously for LSU, and they fought hard, But overall, my takeaway is still by far Alabama's the number one team.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that way. And, you know, going into Baton Rouge, there's no tougher environment. We know that. Being a Saturday night, LSU was certainly ready for the game. Coach O was ready. The team was ready. The fans were ready. I mean, it is as hostile of an environment as you're going to see in college football. I get it. I'm with you. I thought Bama actually would probably dominate a little more than they did. But LSU's defense stood up as well as you can expect against that Alabama team. My big takeaway, and we'll go right into it, is Clemson at number two, is I actually am more encouraged that Clemson has a chance after watching LSU, because Clemson has the same horses defensively that LSU has. They've got NFL guys on that defensive line. They've got first-round talent on that defensive line. They've got great guys in the secondary as well. Maybe not quite to the level of someone like Greedy Williams for LSU, but there is talent there. So to me, I'm thinking, here's the thing with Alabama. You pretty much have to go into that game assuming you're going to give up 30, probably closer to 40 points in most games on a neutral field. So if you're going to give up 40 to Alabama, regardless of how good your defense is, do you have an offense that can keep pace? Do you have an offense that can score on Alabama? Now, I don't know that the answer is yes for anybody, but Clemson, all of a sudden, they're doing Alabama things. They just put up 77 on Louisville, who I understand Louisville is an absolute disaster, but they scored 77, okay? They're averaging over 60 points a game the last 3 weeks of the season. They, of course, dominated NC State, who, oh, by the way, is now in the top 15 of the playoff ranking somehow. I mean, this Clemson team is, offensively, they're hitting their stride at the right time. I feel like they might have a chance. I don't know that they'd win, but I feel like they play 10 times. Clemson probably wins two, maybe three.
Yeah, I'm going to hinge a lot of it on when they play them, because I got some numbers for you that are going to blow you away. So the last 3 years, Alabama's been in the semifinal, right? They get a month to prepare.
Right.
And they're just murdering teams. The last 3 years, they faced Clemson, Washington, Michigan State. They won by a combined 86-13. Three games, gave up one touchdown. Now, that's with a month to prepare. Then you look at the title game. Only a week to prepare, and Clemson, of course, we know famously had a great quarterback who's now in the NFL, Deshaun Watson. He was able to carve them up, right? Only a week to prepare, mobile quarterback. So who has that could possibly pull it off in the national championship game against Alabama? I actually don't know if Trevor Lawrence is capable. However, I'll say this. What if Georgia has not unveiled its nice young freshman quarterback? Okay, what if there's a lot of people are like, where is he? Why isn't he playing? What if Georgia, for the SEC title game, pulls some wrinkle out and they feature the backup freshman quarterback, who there's basically no tape on at the college level, and he is going to basically shock Alabama with his speed and what he could do? I do wonder, will we see a guy like Fields come in and just shock Alabama in the SEC title game? Would that surprise you?
It would surprise me a little, but I mean, that's basically what Alabama did to Georgia a year ago. I mean, they broke the glass on Tua in the second half and it worked. It's kind of the opposite approach that Clemson took, because Clemson had a quarterback that failed to beat Alabama a year ago. To Jake Fromm's credit, he came a lot closer, but they had a quarterback who failed to beat Alabama, and they had a young star freshman, and Clemson decided to go with the freshman eventually and put him in. They say, look, this is the kid who, if he develops, gives us a better chance to beat Alabama. Maybe Georgia's trying to go the other way and pull a little smoke and mirrors act on the tide. I mean, maybe. I don't know that Georgia would play him for four quarters. I don't know that they're going to pull the switcheroo and make Fields the man. Now, could they have some packages with Fields? Sure. I mean, they've already kind of trotted him out at times this year. Last couple weeks, they've gone more with Fromm and let him be the guy. But, you know, maybe. And sometimes that's what it takes. You know, that stat you threw out is great about Alabama and having a month to prepare. He also had to prepare for Kelly Bryant, you know, Jake Browning,
Connor Cook.
I mean, Connor Cook is probably the best of those three. So, you know, Trevor Lawrence, he's a freshman. See, I agree with you, but for a different reason than it matters when Clemson plays Bama. First of all, they're going to play them in the championship. If Clemson loses, they're out of the playoff. So if they keep winning, they're going to be number two. I don't think there's any really variance.
Well, wait. How about a scenario where Georgia takes down Alabama in the SEC title game? Alabama is not going to be one, right? And then Clemson would be one. Alabama would probably be three.
They'd
I mean, again, we're reaching.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult. And I know, I'm sure some people will listen to this and be like, what are you talking about, Jason? Prom and Georgia led them last year like 20 to nothing or whatever the score was. They were up big. I mean, I will say this. Like, that was because of Georgia's defense, how nasty it was with all those NFL players on it, and Alabama's inability to move the ball with Jalen Hurts. I think this year, I just don't know if they're as good Clemson, of course, not Georgia. If Clemson's as good offensively as Georgia can be with Fields. And I know that's a bit of a reach, and that's fine. But to beat Alabama at this point, you're going to need some kind of – something special and different, right? You can't just roll up and expect to knock this team down.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think Georgia has the capability to be as good as Clemson offensively. They have the talent. They haven't quite showed it to me yet. Like, to me, Clemson, putting 59 on Florida State, I know Florida State's a wreck. But their problems are on offense. Florida State has played well defensively most of the season, and Clemson lit them up for 59, and it could have been a lot worse. It could have been 70 if they
totally
wanted
agree.
It to be. So, I mean, we're splitting hairs maybe. I mean, I think both offenses are good. Clemson probably a little more explosive. Trevor Lawrence certainly a better natural passer than Fromm, but Fromm has the experience. Fromm's been there. He's played in the SEC title game. He's played in the playoff. That's the thing, I think, where I go with where you talk about timing with Clemson playing Bama is – Lawrence needs to play Michigan in the semifinal. He needs to play against an elite defense because
I don't know if they're beating Michigan.
Well, now, but that's fair.
And that gets interesting because I've already said I don't give anybody really a chance to beat Alabama in the semifinal. I don't care who it is. You know, unfortunately, I just feel like it's too big an obstacle. A month to prepare is too much for Saban. But in the championship game, I think. Michigan maybe with Harbaugh. I mean, he really needs to let Shea Patterson go nuts, like and unleash him. He can't do this 3 yards in a cloud of dust thing. They're going to get killed.
Yeah.
You know, he's very conservative, and that's not going to play well against Alabama. I don't know why I like Michigan so much. That defense is nasty. Really good cornerbacks, pass rush. But Tua is just, you know, you got to be able to score with them, and I don't know that Michigan can.
Well, hey, before the season, I was banging the Michigan drum. I've been all on Michigan and Jim Harbaugh, and I think he got a bad rap for a couple fluky losses in the last few years. This team is great. They're talented. I thought we were going to see a more wide-open offense this year, and we haven't quite seen it yet. And, I mean, if we're 8 weeks in, I don't know that Harbaugh is going to all of a sudden change his stripes now.
Yeah,
and I'm with you. Like, look, defensively, I mean, Michigan's got a better defense than Alabama, I believe, especially if Rashawn Gary's healthy. They got better players on that defense.
And they're going to – we both agree they're going to take down Ohio State, right?
I mean, unless Ohio State just gets its head out of its rear end. I mean, it's just been –
Well, the Ohio State's defense just is non-existent.
I know.
I just don't think they're very good.
I think Ohio State – I haven't updated the number, but looking going into last week against Nebraska – the Buckeyes were, I believe, in like 97th in 20-plus yard plays allowed. Like, they're just giving up chunk plays left and right to a bunch of pedestrian teams, too. I mean, it's not like they've gone up against the elite teams in the Big Ten yet. I mean, they haven't played Michigan State. I know they played Penn State, but they made TCU, who is in last place in the Big 12, by the way. They made TCU look like the TCU of 4 years ago, and the Horned Frogs might not make a bowl. So, I mean, I'm with you on the Ohio State thing. I think Michigan, if they're not going to beat Ohio State this year, they're never going to. So I think the Wolverines do get through there. But, you know, as it relates back to Clemson real quickly, you know, I just think, look, I don't know that Clemson would absolutely beat Michigan, but I think Lawrence, if Clemson's going to have a chance to beat Bama, Lawrence has to be tested before Alabama. He's not going to be tested by anybody he's faced so far.
Hey, he's not going to be tested in the ACC title.
Absolutely not.
I can't even say it with a straight face.
I know. Do you think the Pitt Panthers are going to put it? No, I mean, Clemson's going to cakewalk through the ACC. I mean, South Carolina's defense, nowhere close to this level. I mean, it's just he's not going to face anything like Alabama whatsoever. And look, the last time we saw him in a big road environment, of course they played well against State, but that was at home. The A&M game was on the road. And
comfortably. I mean, I did have them in that one and they didn't cover for me. They were in control of that game. Mm-hmm. I was a little disappointed. I will say this. I know you took it up the defense a lot. It feels like the defense is more names in the NFL draft than it is actual production. Again, Texas A&M scored 26 on them. I thought Syracuse played really well against them. Syracuse is a good team.
Yeah.
But this isn't the Clemson defense of last year, right? Like, I thought last year's defense was a lot stronger in the big games. They had their struggles as well. I don't know. Just wonder if a lot of those guys are already checking mock drafts every week.
Yeah.
We've talked about them so much, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that they lived up to the hype. It's weird because you look at some of these numbers and, like, efficiency-wise, they're number one or number two. I mean, all these numbers.
Yeah, but how bad is the ACC?
Well, exactly. That's what I tend to agree with you. It's hard to argue with a lot of the evidence that says that they are a great defense. But, yes, they faced a very mediocre schedule. The teams that do have capable quarterback play have actually been able to challenge them a decent bit. I mean, Kellen Mond threw for 400 yards, and Eric Dungy had that game won for Syracuse, and then, of course, Clemson was able to scratch and claw their way to win in the last minute. Trust me, I'm with you. I will say this. I think Clemson over the last 3 weeks is finally the Clemson we expected. Look, I got a lot of heat in Charlotte because up until 3 weeks ago, I said Clemson wasn't even a top 10 team. I mean, if you look at the resume, they didn't play like it. I've changed my tune now. They finally played like we expected them to all season long.
Yeah, it took a little while.
Exactly.
Right?
And now they're there. I think the defense, look, they completely shut down Florida State, which is easy to do these days. But they shut down Louisville. They shut down NC State, who does have a good offense.
You can't have that. You got to delete Louisville from the podcast. You cannot say they shut down Louisville.
I'm just saying they're
so bad.
I know. I'm not giving them credit, but I'm just saying they did what they had to do. I mean, you know, they again struggled with average teams early in the year, and now they're at least blowing the doors off of these below average teams now. They're doing what Alabama's doing. Alabama's done the same thing to a bunch of subpar teams in the SEC as well. So I just think Clemson's inching closer. There's still a gap there, but it wouldn't surprise me. Like I said, they play 10 times on a neutral field. I think Clemson wins two of those, maybe three. I mean, I don't know that Alabama's that much better than everybody else. They're great. Don't get me wrong, but I do think that Clemson could have them. Here's the other team. I'll skip down to them. So they're at number six right now, Oklahoma. And going back to my theory, Jason, that if you just accept the fact that Alabama's going to put 40 on you, okay, who can keep up? To me, if it's not Clemson, Oklahoma could keep up. I don't know that there's another offense in the country outside of Clemson that has a chance to try to put 40 on Alabama. They did it to Georgia's elite defense a year ago. Georgia had the best defense in the country, and Baker Mayfield and Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma lit them up for 40 or 51 points, whatever it was, in that game in the Rose Bowl. I think Kyler Murray in that offense would score a lot of points on Alabama. I don't know if it'll be enough to win, but do I think Oklahoma is a better team than Alabama? No. But do I think on a one-game situation for 60 minutes, trade scores back and forth, could Oklahoma knock off Alabama? I don't think it's crazy.
Interesting. Now, I like your argument because Kyler Murray fits the profile of a quarterback who can take down Alabama.
Sure.
Right? I just have some questions about that defense. I know you're right. Maybe it's a 50-48 game or something like that. But this is a defense that really struggled to contain Texas. I know it's a rivalry game. I mean, the Texas quarterback, like, he's not that good. Yeah. I'm just not a big believer in the Texas team. Baylor fared pretty well. We know Army fared well. I mean, Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, I just love him. I think he'll be an NFL coach this time next year. But Alabama, it's almost a moot point, right? How is Oklahoma sneaking in the playoff anyway? They need Notre Dame to definitely lose. And they would need, I guess, Ohio State tops at Michigan. And then you got to have Alabama definitely beat Georgia. And at that point, do they sneak in?
Yeah, they would. If all of those things happen, which, by the way, I think some of those are outside of the Alabama losing to Georgia thing. I think some of those could very well happen.
Well, wait, who's Notre Dame losing to?
I think Notre Dame's going to get upset in one of the either Syracuse.
At home, they're going to lose to Syracuse.
It's at Yankee Stadium. Relax. There's a lot of New York fans.
It's like a home game for Notre Dame.
It will be.
All those Subway alumni.
I know. Yeah, I think Syracuse could surprise them. I also think this is a separate conversation here, but I think Oklahoma with one loss might have a better resume at the end of the year than an undefeated Notre Dame. Because outside of Michigan, which if Michigan ends up as a top four team, is a tremendous win. But outside of Michigan, where's the quality win on Notre Dame's schedule? You have to hope Syracuse ends up in the top 25, which they're 13 now. But outside of that, Stanford's unranked. Virginia Tech might not make a bowl. Where's the great win?
Could Stanford get back in? I mean,
okay, 24-25. Like, that Stanford's going to be a fringe top 25 team.
So we're totally disregarding the fact that Stanford was, I believe, like seventh in the country when they played Notre Dame. That just doesn't matter.
I'm not a big what were you ranked at the time guy. I just think you need to take.
Where are the good Oklahoma wins?
Well, they would have West Virginia twice, assuming they run the table, because they play them at season's end, and then in likelihood it looks like West Virginia will play in the Big 12 title game now that they knocked off Texas. So let's say
that cancels out the Michigan and the Syracuse.
Probably something along those lines. So if you look, well, let me pull up Oklahoma's schedule, because at that point I feel like it's almost a wash. I feel like it's very
Oklahoma,
close.
Like, usually they have that early season game against Ohio State. Not this year. They played UCLA. They can't help it that UCLA stinks.
For sure.
Army, Iowa Florida State, Atlantic.
They would have Iowa State. Now, I'm not saying Iowa State's a trump card in this debate here, but they would have Iowa State. So
is Iowa State going to stay ranked? I mean,
it's
going to
be close.
They still have to face Texas.
Here's where I go. I'm not even saying that Notre Dame wouldn't make it. What I'm saying is, conference championship, they say this matters. 12-0 Notre Dame, you got 12-1 Oklahoma. On paper, look very similar. One team has a conference championship, one team doesn't. That 13th data point they used a couple years ago. I'm not saying it would happen, but I'm saying it's possible. I could see a world in where the committee gives Oklahoma the nod because of that. And look, Notre Dame's resume just isn't impressive. If Syracuse loses a couple games down the stretch, all they have to do is lose one other. They play Louisville, but they play Boston College at the end of the year. They lose two straight. They lose to Notre Dame and BC. They're not ranked. All of a sudden, Notre Dame's only ranked win is Michigan. Now, that's a hell of a win because Michigan might be top four. I just don't know their resume would hold up against maybe Oklahoma, especially given that they have that conference championship. It's going to be close is all I'm saying. And maybe Oklahoma doesn't get in, but if they did, I do think, going back to what you said about, well, Oklahoma gave up a lot of points to Baylor and they gave up a lot of points to Texas. They did. But here's the thing. Oklahoma could give up 40 points a game and Alabama could give up 20, and that's fine. When you play against one another, you only get 7 for scoring. If you give up a touchdown every time they score, that's fine. But you score every time too, you're in a shootout. It doesn't matter which defense is better.
You know, you referenced the Big 12 championship game, which does matter. Let me throw this at you, and I know people don't like to hear this on social media. What about the Notre Dame factor?
No, I know.
Notre Dame is by far – I know what – people can bash Notre Dame and say they don't matter anymore. They matter, okay? Notre Dame is one of the most popular teams in college football. Regardless of who you like or root for, there is knowledge of Notre Dame, whether it's simply the fight song, whether it is, you know, the history. Like, people care about Notre Dame. I'm not saying people don't care about Oklahoma and they're fun to watch. They put up a lot of points. I think if push comes to shove, the committee's got to go with Oklahoma, does it not? I'm sorry, Notre Dame over Oklahoma.
You sound like my co-host here in Charlotte because he's big on the brand conspiracy thing that they're going to put in the teams because they're the bigger draw and they carry more weight. They're better for TV ratings. I get all that. The committee doesn't make any more money off of that. It's not like they have something at stake there. I mean, do you think Frank Beamer really wants to put Notre Dame in because they're a bigger name? Like, I don't think they care. I think they want the best teams. Now, you could make a strong case for either one.
Do they want the best teams or do they want what's best for the sport?
I mean, I just don't – maybe. But I feel like Oklahoma – if what's best for the sport is a team – that has the best chance to win a title or the best chance to compete with Alabama. To me, if Notre Dame plays Alabama, I'm sorry, maybe you disagree. Notre Dame's losing by 35 or more. We've seen that.
Well, we've seen that movie before. Okay. See, and I was ready for that question, Josh, because I know a lot of people use that as an argument. And I would say, listen, I want an 18 playoff, and just FYI, I want UCF in there. I don't care that Alabama's going to be favored by 40 against them, and they're going to beat them by maybe 50. I think UCF in an 18 playoff, obviously a 4, they got no chance. Mm-hmm. But in an 18 playoff, Josh, I think I need to see them in there. When the season starts for how many college football teams are there in the entire Division I?
131.
131. When the season starts in August, 131 teams should theoretically have a chance to run the table and get in an 18 playoff. But the way that the committee looks at it and the way you just said where, like, they would get killed by X amount, like, really, you're looking at like maybe 15 teams when practice starts. And that fundamentally seems wrong to me. That's my biggest beef with college football. Like, yeah. I don't think the sport's right when, you know, 85% of the sport is wiped out on the first day of practice because they don't have a name. And they're not in the power conference. I think something about that sucks.
You're not going to find a debate here, my friend, because I'm on board with you there. And I also agree UCF would get killed. I mean, I think that, you know, we can't sit here. I mean, in a four-team situation, I do think you have to take into account who has the most likely chance to win the playoff. Who has the most likely chance to win this tournament? If you're debating four versus five, who do you think is the best team? You know, the most deserving thing, I kind of have a hard time discerning between those sometimes. I know that becomes like this big catchphrase that people like to use, but I just think the most deserving team is the best team. And if it came down to Notre Dame-Oklahoma, I think it would be Oklahoma. I'm probably in the minority, but it is what it is. If it was an 18 playoff, I do think that a team like UCF, that's the highest ranked team from outside the Power Five, deserves a seat at the table, and they would get housed by Alabama. And I don't want to hear that they beat Auburn last year, and you know Utah beat Alabama once in a Sugar Bowl, and Boise State beat Oklahoma.
Oh gosh,
it's ridiculous. You can have the best group of five teams can have Power Five talent at the top 22 positions on the team. You've got to have 60 guys who can play in a Power 5 league to make it through a Power 5 conference schedule with 11 or 12 wins. You have to have depth. You have to be able to survive attrition. You play against Connecticut, and you play against Cincinnati as your toughest game, and Temple, okay? You're not building depth. You're not being tested like you are the physicality of a SEC schedule or a Big 12 schedule or whatever it is. It's so much more difficult than it is to just kind of waltz through with a lot of talent and you're starting 22, with kind of waltz through an easier schedule, take a month, lick your wounds, prepare, and most of the time, you're playing in a bowl game with very little stakes for your opponent, who probably, and especially in Auburn's case a year ago, thought that they could be playing for a playoff, and instead they get their consolation prize to play against a team from the AAC. I mean, it's just that matters, and people want to try to just dismiss that. Danny Cannell tries to say this all the time. I love Danny. Danny is flat wrong about that. And if they got into a playoff scenario where there are real stakes and they're playing against Alabama, or for that matter, Clemson, it's not close. It's not close. And look, give them the spot. They deserve it. Good for them. Like, highest ranked team, cool. But they're not going to stand a chance against those programs. And that's the way we find out.
I'll say this. By and large, I agree with they're going to get blown out by everybody. But when you get a month to prepare and you're the small guy and you're going up against a big dog, I think you can incorporate some trick plays, some gadget stuff that could make the game interesting. You know, a turnover here, we're dealing with 19-year-olds. Okay, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know that they could take down Clemson, but I want them in that discussion so I could watch them. Like, listen, I like Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. I like that defense. We've seen that offense sputter for three quarters.
Sure.
I mean, the Northwestern game, you know, like, they're prone, you know, these are college kids. Nobody's perfect. I mean, I just that's why I want to see the underdog in there. But overall, yeah, so but still got a 14 playoff, so no, I don't think they're going
to
sniff it.
And like you said, month to prepare. Okay. Let's say you get through week one. Now you have to try to win a national title in back-to-back weeks, take on a top four team, and then probably the number one team. I mean, like, you're not doing it three straight weeks is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean,
not at that level.
I know people don't want to compare it to college basketball, but the opening round is where you see upsets, right? I mean, usually as it progresses, it gets tougher to take down, the big dogs. When they have, you know, a lot of time after that, you know, the first weekend's done, then you got like 4 days, you start feeling yourself, the underdog is all over the news, and then they get smoked in the Sweet 16.
Right.
But, you know, opening game, I mean, hell, Arizona had the number one pick in the draft, DeAndre Ayton, they get smashed by 30 against Buffalo. Like, I'm an underdog guy. Listen, you talked about my credentials or whatever at the beginning of the podcast, and like, I've been an underdog my whole life, you know, like, I've been undersized when I tried to make the basketball team as a freshman in high school. I started a small blog. I mean, there aren't a lot of bloggers who've translated to TV. Like, I've always been an underdog, so I'm always going to root for the underdog.
I love the story. I mean, I hate to sound like someone who's against, you know, great stories in sports. To me, the upsets, the historic upsets in not only college sports, but just sports in general are what make it so great. But at the end of the day, I'm also in the business of being fair, and especially in a 14 playoff, which you and I agree, what's fair is giving the best teams a chance to win. It's unfair to put a team in because of some sort of political reason or any of this other BS that, you know, keeps out deserving teams. And the system is inherently flawed. If you go to eight, you at least get the teams in that win their conferences. If you want to throw in the best team from the group of five, that's fine. They earn it. But at that point, it would at least be fair, and you would give the teams that deserve a chance a chance. So, and maybe that includes UCF. But to me, I think we both can agree on that. So, Jason, we're going to wrap it up with that. This was fun. A lot of playoff talk. There's still 4 weeks left. SEC championship, ACC championship, 4 weeks away.
Let me put you on the spot real quick.
Okay.
Give me a winner: Michigan, Ohio State.
All right. Where's the game this year? Is it in Columbus?
It's in Columbus. Michigan now is a 3.5-point favorite. Mm. Could change, of course.
I said Michigan. I've been on Michigan all year. I picked them to win the Big Ten. I'm not going to change now.
Michigan in the playoff, I'm assuming.
I do. I think it's going to.
So who are your current four?
So if I was playing it out, I think it's going to be Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, Oklahoma. I think Notre Dame is going to stumble. And, they're heavily favored in every game. Syracuse, even though they're in the top 15 now, Notre Dame is going to be favored in that. I haven't seen enough from Notre Dame to make me think that they're going to make it. Something weird always happens in this month. Something weird happens. And I'm not trying to be some bold hot take, throw it out there just to say I'm right if it happens. I'm just going off of historical precedent. There's always something weird that goes down, and to me, Notre Dame seems like the most likely one. And Michigan, of course, on the road against Ohio State, that's an easy one to point to and say, well, they could lose. They certainly can. But like you said 20 minutes ago, Ohio State has been – they have played so far below their ability level all year long that I can't buy into them now. If I've been pumping Michigan all year, I'm not jumping off the bandwagon now. I do think the Wolverines win that game, and they're coming off their best performance of the year. I mean, they beat the crap out of Penn State. They did what they had to do in that one.
I do wonder. We discussed it. Would Notre Dame be a better watch in a blowout against Alabama, where the game's over at halftime? And I gotta say, like, Notre Dame looked really good against Stanford. They haven't blown me away with dominance the way, you know, Oklahoma has at times looked. I almost do wonder if you have a decent point there that Alabama would be better than Notre Dame. Now, undefeated Notre Dame, you can't make an argument about, but in terms of from a game standpoint, you talk about an Oklahoma shootout against Alabama, I think that would be a better game than Notre Dame.
It would. I mean, like I said, I go back to Oklahoma a year ago that they didn't have a defense last year either. And Georgia had the best defense in America. Roquan Smith, all those guys, I mean, they were dominant. And Baker Mayfield put up 50 on them, okay? And Kyler Murray is doing everything. I don't know. He's not going to be the pro. He's not even going to play in the NFL, but he wouldn't be the pro that Baker is. But in college, he is doing everything Baker Mayfield did for that offense and more. They're running the ball over 10 yards a carry. Like, Oklahoma's offense is elite, and I think they'd score on Alabama. Now, they would give up 50 points to Alabama, too. But right. I think that would be a thrilling – that was the game of the year.
Okay, so what about this scenario? Does it make more sense for the committee to go Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame at 3, and then Michigan at 4? But then again, does Michigan have any chance? Although I will say Nick Saban versus Jim Harbaugh, like, you don't need to sell that game.
Oh,
that
my gosh. Sells itself. I think that's – I mean – If it's not the way – if Notre Dame wins out, it is Notre Dame 3 and Michigan 4. They're not going to – now, I think Michigan's better, but the committee's not going to rank Michigan ahead of Notre Dame given the head-to-head. And that's an easy one for them too, because if they're both getting in, well, all right, Notre Dame's 3, Michigan's 4, avoid any controversy. The real controversy would be if you're putting Notre Dame in and leaving Michigan out, even though Michigan probably has a stronger quality win resume – and a Big Ten championship, of course, that's when the committee would have, you know, it would have a hairy situation on its hands. If you're just putting them both in and seeding Notre Dame ahead of Michigan, yeah, I mean, that's easy for them. So Notre Dame would be 3. I think Clemson would run Notre Dame off the field. And then the Harbaugh Saban thing would be fun. I do think Alabama would have its way with Michigan. I don't think that the Wolverines can keep
that
pace.
That actually would probably be better because, you know, again, Harbaugh Saban as a subplot is amazing. Everybody's going to want to watch that.
Oh yeah.
And then maybe maybe Notre Dame's that built-in audience. Maybe you get Notre Dame in the championship off a week. Brian Kelly, good offensive mind. It's tough for me to even make an argument. Notre Dame's really good, but I do think by far Clemson's a better team.
Well, see, I think if you want the perfect rating scenario, I think you want Alabama, Notre Dame in the semis, because I just think it's less likely that Notre Dame makes it through regardless of who they play. So you get that Alabama Notre Dame game. Then if you're Alabama, you're playing with house money if you're an executive sitting up there with ESPN, because you're either going to get the fourth rematch of Alabama Clemson with a real chance that Clemson pulls off the upset, or does Alabama complete an historic season, or you get the Saban Harbaugh. I mean, I think that way you get Alabama Notre Dame and you get Alabama versus either Dabo again or versus Harbaugh. I mean, I think it's a win-win there if that's the case. But again, I don't think that that's going to happen. I don't think Michigan jumps Notre Dame at any point. I would do it, but I don't think the committee would.
Listen, they take down Ohio State. I don't see how you keep them behind Notre Dame.
I agree.
They have a way better resume. They already strength the schedule. They're ahead of Notre Dame considerably, and they're only going to get better even after that time.
Trust me, I agree. But I think that Notre Dame, Syracuse, because Syracuse somehow is ranked 13, is going to help prop up Notre Dame's strength of schedule at the end of the year. I don't know that it'll happen. But we'll see. That's the exciting part. There's a few weeks left. Something unexpected is going to happen where our minds are going to be blown, and we're going to sit here and try and figure it all out in a few weeks, and we'll see what happens. But Jace, I'm gonna let you run, man. I know you got like 100 different shows to get to, so you go do your thing. And I'm sorry, you are a Jets fan, right? I was about to make a Jets joke.
Okay. Listen, I don't mind. Listen, a quick reminder: not Dan Marino, Peyton Manning led the NFL.
Oh boy,
in interceptions
here we go.
As a rookie. Okay, I'm not saying Darnold's gonna be Peyton, but I'm not concerned at all. Listen, he started the season good. He's hit a bit of a wall. Okay, no question about that. Jets injuries are mounting. His team needs a bye week badly. They're not very good, but I think he rebounds at home against Buffalo this week. So I know the Jets are going to be favored by 7, which is a big, big number, but Buffalo is awful. Awful. Yeah.
If there was
there
was ever a remedy for a quarterback, it's playing the Bills. So good luck with that. Best of luck to your Jets the rest of this season, and congratulations on Sam Darnold's Hall of Fame induction.
All right, Josh.
All right, big thanks to Jason McIntyre for joining me to talk rankings and college football playoff and all that good stuff. If you're not a Virginia Tech fan, podcast probably over for you. But if you are a Virginia Tech fan and you want to tune in to hear my thoughts on what's going on with the Hokies, here they are. Okay, I'm just going to go right into it. Justin Fuente deserves absolutely no criticism for what's taking place on the field this season. And the idea that the coaching staff is somehow to blame for this team being 4-4 at this point, for being in jeopardy of ending the bowl streak, is absolutely insane. Okay, I don't know where this notion began that Justin Fuente doesn't know how to call an offense, or that Brad Cornelison is a bad offensive coordinator, and the play calling is just completely suspect. And I've even seen Bud Foster needs to retire. Tweets. Okay, the nonsense that has filled up my Twitter over the last 4 days since the loss to Boston College on Saturday makes me want to drive my head into a wall. And I don't normally get this heated up on the podcast. I save that for the radio show if you listen to that. But I got to be honest. I've been watching Virginia Tech football for 25 years. And I was there for the beginning of the Beamer run. The Sugar Bowl in 95, the Sugar Bowl in 99. Some of you guys probably don't even know about the Sugar Bowl in 95 that are listening to this show. Okay, when you hear Sugar Bowl, you think 99, Michael Vick, Florida State. No, no, no. I'm talking Texas. I'm talking Brian Still. I'm talking that Sugar Bowl. Okay, I go back a ways. All right, I've watched this program rise. I've seen it fall. I've seen where it is today. And Justin Fuente inherited a program 3 years ago that had slipped not just a mere few inches in recruiting. They had slipped miles in recruiting in terms of the caliber of player they recruited, in terms of the character of the players that they recruited. And I know for a fact that some members of the coaching staff, the old coaching staff at Virginia Tech, you can connect the dots and figure out where the common denominator lies in this, okay? Completely deviated from the standard that Virginia Tech
carried itself with throughout the glory years of the Frank Beamer era. Now, Frank Beamer's health became a concern. Frank Beamer just generally aging became a concern. He didn't have the same control over the program that he once had. He empowered certain coaches on the staff. Again, you can connect the dots. He empowered certain coaches on the staff to take control of the program. And those coaches did an absolutely horrific job of maintaining the standard of excellence at Virginia Tech. When Justin Fuente walked in 3 years ago, he had to clean up that mess. And what did he do immediately? First of all, he took a junior college quarterback. He went out and recruited the highest rated junior college quarterback since Cam Newton, okay, in 7 years, 6 years, 7 years, whatever it was, okay, and immediately is able to use him as a stopgap to win not only 10 games, but to come within 25 yards, less than 25 yards, of tying or beating Clemson in the ACC championship game. Okay, Justin Fuente was able to take a handful of key skill players in Isaiah Ford, Bucky Hodges, Cam Phillips, and insert Gerard Evans into that lineup, use a guy in Sam Rogers, who is more heart than anything else. His heart is a 10 out of 10. His ability, 6 out of 10. Love the kid. But look, that kid was a terrific leader. He was able to use the select few veterans on that offense to light up the record books. Okay? It was so much of a different look. It was so different and so much better and so much more exciting of a product than we had quite honestly ever seen at Virginia Tech. You go back to offenses that had Eddie Royal, Josh Morgan, Justin Harper, Mike Emo, Marcus Vick, Brian Randall. Those offenses couldn't do what that offense 2 years ago did. You had offenses with Tyrod Taylor, Danny Cole, Jared Boykin that could not put up the numbers. It did not put up the numbers that Gerard Evans and Bucky Hodges and Isaiah Ford did. That offense was the evolution that Virginia Tech had been waiting for 2 decades. And that was because of Justin Fuente. That was because of Justin Fuente. That was because of Brad Cornelison. That was because of a new system, a new style, a new mindset in Blacksburg. And you finally paired elite offensive play calling with good talent and a Bud Foster defense. And look what happened. Now let's fast forward a year. Okay, Isaiah Ford declares himself for the draft. Not an awful decision. He ends up going in the 7th round. He has, because of injuries, to be fair, has really had a hard time gaining footing. He's not playing in the league right now. Bucky Hodges decides to go pro. Gets drafted in the 6th round. Has made absolutely no impact in the NFL. Does not even have a career reception. He's on his 3rd team in 2 years. Gerard Evans decides to go pro. There were a lot of extenuating circumstances there, which we don't even need to get into. But surprisingly goes pro. Does not get drafted, has never played in the NFL. So 2 of the 3 guys that you lose to the draft have not even played a snap in the NFL. Isaiah Ford is a guy who's been virtually a non-factor as well. So you lost 3 guys who have had no pro career that could have been on that team in 2017. You have Gerard Evans and Isaiah Ford and Cam Phillips and Bucky Hodges on the 2017 team. That team's a preseason top 10 team. That team likely challenges Clemson for the ACC title a second straight year. And all of a sudden, Virginia Tech is back-to-back 10 winning seasons, back-to-back ACC Coastal champions, probably a New Year's Six Bowl a year ago, to be honest with you, with all the talent they had on that defense. That's a top 10 team. So Justin Fuente lost the guys he was counting on to lead him to not only just a step forward, a leap forward in year two. This was going to be the rebuilding year before 2019 came along. So instead, last year, they managed to still win 9 games with a freshman at quarterback with absolutely no talent at wide receiver, no experienced talent outside of Cam Phillips at wide receiver. And they still managed to put together a productive offense and a winning football team. Okay, he piecemealed that team together a year ago. Now, let's flash forward to 2018. What takes place for Virginia Tech? Okay, well, they're supposed to have an elite defense. Back offense is going to be replacing a ton of guys, a lot of youth on the offense. Josh Jackson expected to be really the glue that holds the Hokie offense together. What happens on the defensive side? Oh, okay, Mook Reynolds kicked off the team. Adonis Alexander kicked off the team. All right, you just lost 2 of your 3-year starters on the defensive back 7. All right, what are you going to do? What else happens? Okay, well, Trevon Hill kicked off the team as a after the Old Dominion game defensive end. There are three starters. Oh, by the way, let's back up even further. You lost Terrell Edmonds, shockingly, to the draft. Now, he did go in the first round, so that sort of makes up for the shock value there. Good for Terrell Edmonds. He got his money. Happy for the kid. You weren't expecting Terrell Edmonds to go pro. So you lose Terrell Edmonds. Oh, Tim Settle. Kid, redshirt sophomore, third year in the program, had a good year. Not a great year. Had a good year. Could have been probably a second or third round pick had he stayed in school one more year. Instead decides to go pro, becomes a fifth round pick. That's fine. Good for him. He got his money. You were not counting on losing Tim Settle and Terrell Edmonds. So this defense, while Tremaine Edmonds, first round pick, arguably the best linebacker in the draft, no surprise you lose Tremaine Edmonds. But those other guys, Terrell Edmonds, Tim Settle, Mook Reynolds, Adonis Alexander, and of course Jervon Hill midseason, you were counting on having all of those guys. At what point does that fall on Justin Fuente? At what point does that fall on the coaching staff? What you've seen with this team this season is a team that has absolutely zero veteran leadership. And it has four seniors who are starting on that team right now. Now, I don't want to be unfair to Ricky Walker, because I do think Ricky Walker is a tremendous player. He has earned every accolade that has come his way as a Hokie. Okay, he's been a terrific senior for this team. This team is so young. And you look at some of the best coaches in college football. When they are tasked with trying to win in a Power 5 league with virtually no senior talent, with no upperclassman talent, you do not succeed. That is not a formula for success in college football. This is not college basketball, where you can recruit a bunch of freshmen, trot them out on the field, and win football games. Experience wins out every time in college football, especially at the Power 5 level. Mark D'Antonio 2 years ago went 3-9, okay, with five senior starters. The next year he went 10-3, played in a New Year's Bowl. Gary Patterson, a Justin Fuente mentor, okay? I guarantee you those two guys are talking at some point. If they're not right now, they're going to at the end of the year. Gary Patterson, with very few senior starters, okay, three senior starters, I believe, goes 4-8 in 2013. The next year, TCU should have been in the college football playoff. They go 12-1. They beat the doors off of Ole Miss in the Peach Bowl, okay? This is what happens when you have an extraordinarily young team. You lose football games. And Virginia Tech is building a program now, because what you're finally seeing is the dearth of talent, the absolute loss of talent from the recruiting class cycle of 2013 to 2016 in Virginia Tech. They did not recruit at the same level. There were a few key players. There were a couple key pieces. The guys like Bucky Hodges, you know, guys like Isaiah Ford, who turned out to be a terrific player as a three-star recruit. You had a few isolated guys who turned out to be great players. You have to build depth. That recruiting cycle for those 4 years did not do anything to the depth of Virginia Tech. It killed the depth of the roster. And now Justin Fuente has had to try to build that back up. 80% of this team is sophomores or younger. 80% of this team. Look around the rest of the ACC. Point to a program that's in better shape than Virginia Tech right now in the Coastal Division. You see one? Pittsburgh? Virginia? North Carolina? Duke? None of those programs are in any worse shape or any better shape than Virginia Tech right now. Okay? Virginia Tech has the infrastructure, it has the history, and it has the coaching staff to rebound and be a better program than any other school in the ACC Coastal, including Miami at this point. Okay? And if you've been listening to this podcast, you know how I feel about Miami. I'll believe it when I see it with the Hurricanes. There is a serious, serious problem right now in the ACC Coastal in terms of developing talent and winning at a high level. And Virginia Tech is absolutely built to win football games in the near future. Next year's team is going to return virtually everybody on offense, virtually everybody on defense. They're bringing in more recruits. They're having another great year on the recruiting trail. Virginia Tech is not Clemson. They never will be Clemson. Even if they turn this program around and start winning 9-10 games a year, they're not going to recruit in the top 10. They're not in South Carolina. They don't have the money that Clemson has. Stop trying to say that Virginia Tech's going to be Clemson. But what they can be is a very, very worthy challenger in the opposite side of the conference. Okay? You know who else doesn't have the infrastructure and the resources of some of the best schools in their conference? TCU, Michigan State, the two schools I just listed. Michigan State has beaten Michigan four of the last six seasons. and I believe it's something like 8 of the last 10. You think Michigan State is concerned about the resources and the deficit they have against their in-state rival Michigan? Virginia Tech doesn't need the resources of Clemson to compete. Clemson's always going to be a better program as long as Dabo Swinney's in charge and the money's pouring into Clemson like it is. But that doesn't mean Virginia Tech cannot be that very worthy 1A in the conference. Florida State should be there as well. They've got big issues along there in their program for sure. But Virginia Tech can be there. And Justin Fuente's the right guy for the job. When you put talent and experience with Justin Fuente and that coaching staff, they win at an extremely high level. He did it at Memphis too. It took him several years. He didn't have the luxury at Memphis of stepping in with an experienced group of receivers and a quarterback with all the talent in the world, not all the talent in the world, but a talented quarterback that can win football games immediately. He had to build over the course of three seasons, and he went from 2 wins to whatever to 10 wins. Look, he gradually built this thing. Okay? At Virginia Tech, it almost feels like the biggest sin is that he won big in year one. It almost feels like people would rather Tech have won 6 games that year, chalk it up to rebuilding, and then when you win 9 the next year, it's progress, and then this year, we're still kind of rebuilding. Well, now people saw what happened 2 years ago, and they just think that that's going to just, you know, wave our hands, and Tech's going to win 10 games every year. That's not Virginia Tech right now, okay? It is taking him years to build the depth back into the program, and he's doing it, okay? Save me your Penn State's beating us on the recruiting trail, Clemson's beating us on the recruiting trail. That's going to happen 99% of the time, okay? That also happened 99% of the time when Virginia Tech won 10 games for 7 straight seasons, won the ACC 4 times, and was one of the top 10 programs in college football, okay? Justin Fuente already has a better track record on the recruiting trail than Frank Beamer. He already has a more energetic staff, an offense that is fit for the modern game of football, 21st century, this Virginia Tech team is going to be just fine, okay? This program is going to be just fine without your bitching and complaining on Twitter and on whatever message board you have to go to after the game to try to vent whatever frustration you have about this program. I'm angry, I'm frustrated at the way this program is being treated, at the way the coaching staff is being treated, because this program deserves better from the fans. Virginia Tech's got one of the best fan bases in all of college football. Could not have been more thrilled to see that stadium virtually full against a Boston College team. When you're 4-3, you're far below expectations for the program traditionally, and they still packed Lane Stadium on a cold November afternoon. That is Virginia Tech fans at their best. I don't want to hear from these just absolute nut jobs on Twitter who have to just get on whatever computer they can find and start typing away about how they think they could do a better job than Brad Cornelison. Save it. This team's going to be just fine a year from now when guys like Trey Turner and Damon Hazelton and every other receiver they've got, Hezekiah Grimsley, Phil Patterson, those guys are a year older, more experienced. Now all of a sudden you're loaded with upperclassmen who've been playing games. You're playing against teams in the rest of the ACC who are trying to reload themselves. Virginia Tech's going to be just fine. Just fine. That's my rant about Virginia Tech. I'm glad I got that off my chest because I'm sick and tired of hearing all of the negativity around the program. Look, sometimes it happens to the best programs around. TCU, Michigan State, just talk to them. They seem to be just fine. So anyway, that's it for today's show. Had to end it on a little bit of an angry note. We'll be happier on the next episode for sure. Chris Vanini from The Athletic is going to join me later in the week to talk about coaching carousel. The coaching hot seat is starting to ramp up across the country. We've already got Kansas and Les Miles rumors to talk about. So Chris Vanini will join me later in the week to give us his thoughts on what jobs are going to come open, who could fill those jobs, and all the latest around the coaching carousel as November rolls on. So thanks again so much for listening. Don't forget to download, subscribe, resubscribe, all that good stuff, and send me your rating and review with your favorite player as well. Thanks again so much. We'll talk to you next time. Have a good one.